The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 13th of November, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Gil Holzman, co-founder and chief executive officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. ECO is ticker there, and Gil discusses the update they have released on the initial analysis of the Jethro and Joe wells in Guyana. Also on the podcast, Stephen Blythe, Chief Executive Officer of Expediator, XPD. And Stephen talks about the appointment of a new Chief Financial Officer and general progress at the company. Plus, John Mayer, Mining Analyst and Partner at SP Angel, talks about the US-China trade deal, gold, and the following companies, Ark Minerals and Bushveld Minerals. And as always, two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, if you go to voxmarkets.co.uk, you can see a top 10 versions of both those lists. And if you do receive an RNS, okay, from the app is free to download at your app store, and you like the contents of that app, then please hit that thumbs up button, all right? And it could feature on the podcast right here, giving it a bit of a extra publicity. And, of course, on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gil Holzman, co-founder and chief executive officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. ECO is ticker there. Gil, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. Good morning.
Morning. Now, you've released an update on the initial analysis of the Jethro and Joe wells. The share price is taking a bit of a knock, and we'll get into that, and I'll get your side of it, of course, because I understand why that's happening. But as I like to do as always, if someone's just listening to you for the first time, could you just explain what Eco is about, please, Gil?
Yes, Eco Atlantic is an oil and gas exploration company. We focus on the Atlantic margins fields. We have one of the best blocks in the world offshore Guyana, as well as four offshore blocks in Namibia, the up-and-coming exploration region. We always partner with bigger partners such as Talo, Total, our partners in Guyana, as well as Azinam and Namco in Namibia. We explore for oil. We came up with two big oil discoveries just a few months ago in Guyana, and there's a lot of work being done in Guyana and in Namibia to uncover and discover much more oil.
Yeah, exactly. Now, take us into this analysis, because, like I said, I read through it, and unless you're an oil man, I don't suppose people would understand why the share price has dropped. So what's your take on the analysis so far?
The share price have dropped has nothing to do with being an oilman. The share price dropped because this is how AIM reacts, and they're extremely overreacting, and I think that's a real buying opportunity after this morning reaction. All we announced is that as an exploration company, we had two oil discoveries. Mm-hmm. That's not bad. The oil is heavier than expected. It's heavy oil, but there's a lot of other heavy oil fields, producing fields, with a very healthy IRR around the world, such as Kraken, such as Mariner, such as Peregrino. And we have oil which is not dissimilar to this oil. Heavy oil, the issue with heavy oil is the ability to flow test it, to flow it to surface. Okay. And for that, you need all kind of ingredients. In our case, the ingredients are there, and they're all very positive. We have an overpressure at the hole. The porosity and permeability are very, very high. The temperature is higher than what one could expect in such a such depth, and therefore the oil is mobile. Once the oil is mobile, all you need to is to apply few producing techniques in order to flow it to the surface. Once you have the oil there, then there are so many refineries, especially in the Gulf Coast, in the United States and elsewhere, that are now hungry for this kind of heavy oil because of the shutdown in Venezuela and other places that are not producing this oil anymore. Mm-hmm. To some extent, people are paying premium to this kind of Brent or to this kind of oil because the lack of it. So the key question now between the JV partners with Talo, Total, And echo is, can we flow the oil to surface? And the answer is, according to what we see now, is yes. So as long as it's flowing, as long as it's producible, it's commercial. And therefore, as I said, the reaction in the share price is much too overreacted. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very big buying opportunity.
Having said that,
one should remember, this is something I always repeat, this is only the beginning. We have one of the most prospective oil blocks in the world today, which is the Orindi block offshore Guyana. We only started to explore it with two exploration wells. Both came in, so we have two discoveries out of two wells. There are more than 20 additional prospects, much bigger, and in different types of play and in different ages that we will test in the upcoming year and two. So there's a lot to expect still to come out from Guyana. We know for a fact that there's lighter oil in the region. Many of the Exxon discoveries right next to us are lighter oil. Hammerhead seems to be the same kind of age type to Jethro. But I'm very, very optimistic towards the next year drilling campaign, and we'll come up with additional oil discoveries.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be pointed out, we are talking right now just an hour after the stock markets opened. Things always tend to overreact in the first hour or so of markets, and they sort of correct. But the concern is that it's heavy oil, which wasn't expected. But you were saying because of the temperature and the pressure of the reservoir, it should be fine. Is that all right? Yeah.
We appointed a third party consultant, heavy oil specialist consultant, to run few models of production. All the models came up positive. We have more than 9 production scenarios that we currently reviewing, all of them came up positive, meaning the oil will flow to the surface and from there you can actually sell it. This is a work in progress. We're still waiting final lab results. There's still a range on the API. There's still a range on the sulfur content. It's not the end of the world. We better have oil which is somewhat heavier than to come up and announce a duster. It looks like the market is considering to be a duster. Yeah. We must remember that Carapa, another exploration well, is being drilled as we speak right now, just south of us, on the Repsol-operated Kanuku block with Talo and Total. Results from it could come in the next three, four weeks. Beginning of December. If it hits, it will open the entire Cretaceous play, which we know is lighter. We are planning to update the market in the next few weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, with a new upgraded CPR that takes into account additional prospects that we now see after the first two discoveries that we made, and we can actually see an upgrade in the chances of success of many of the prospects. Mm-hmm. And of course we have Namibia on the other side of the Atlantic, which is now being very, very attractive, with a lot of activity, drilling activity planned for 2020, as well as additional corporate and all kind of partnerships activity.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, as far as you're concerned, I mean, obviously, you know, you are part of the company, but your initial thoughts,
big shareholder.
So your initial thoughts on this analysis was what? And then, you know, afterwards, once you got sort of expert sort of opinion on it, what was your thoughts at the start and then afterwards?
As I said, we are the only company in 2019 that drilled two wells and came up with two oil discoveries. Okay, one should not forget this.
Yeah.
We have oil. Yeah. The alternative is to have a duster. We have oil. We have oil. Yes, it's a bit heavier. It's more complicated than have a light oil that will flow into surface immediately. But we have all the right ingredients in place that we think that the oil will be commercial, producible, and with a very good profit margins. But as I said, this is only the beginning. These are just two small pockets of oil that we have on a block that might host up to 4 billion barrels. We now only uncovered or started to scratch the surface in terms of discoveries. We have two small discoveries around 400 million barrels, something like that, out of 4 billion. So there's so much more room to grow. And again, if you know, I'm a shareholder, and I think that this is a very, very, very big, good buying opportunity now that the market have overreacted so much.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, in summary, then, Gil, as always, if someone thinks and you know thinks the same way as you here, but are not yet following the story, give them those three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
That's quite easy. We have Carapa well being drilled right now. We hope for a positive result in 3-4 weeks. We have the new CPR coming out in the next month that will show exactly additional prospects and upgraded chances of success. We have Namibia, which is heating up towards drilling campaigns in 2020 and a lot of activity going on in the region. And as I said, Orindu block is one of the best exploration blocks in the world. We are very, very confident. Us, Talo and Total are very confident that we the additional 20 big prospects that we have there, and with a vigorous 2020 drilling campaign, we will come up with additional oil discoveries, and the market will be very, very happy.
Marvelous stuff, Gil. Good to chat to you as always. So, like you say, lots going on. So, no doubt we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Blythe, Chief Executive Officer of Expediator XPD is the ticker there. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Yes, good morning.
Now, you've announced an RNS, a directorate change, and we'll discuss the ins and outs of that in a bit. But as always, Stephen, if someone is listening to the podcast for the first time or hearing you on the podcast for the first time, could you just summarise Expediator for them, please?
I'll try and be brief because we have lots of parts of the business, but we're in principle a freight management business with three principal divisions. Our freight forwarding division, which moves goods around Europe principally, but we're now expanding into air and sea. So we're an asset-light business on that particular area of the business, and we just arrange freight internationally.
Yeah.
Our affinity division has over 2,000 trucking customers who are running around about 15,000 vehicles. We supply them with cross-channel ferries, fuel cars, etc. That has a gross takings of around about 160 million euros. That's a business we've been doing since 2002. And that's a valuable part of the business, not only in what we earn from it, but also a lot of those customers are also suppliers to our freight forwarding side. Given that there's going to be a driver shortage within Europe, we think we're ideally placed with our customer base to provide us services on our forwarding side. Our third area is our logistics, which is principally based in the UK and also in Romania. In Romania, we have the franchise for Pallex, which is a palletized network. In the UK, there's about 8 of those. In Romania, we have the one and only. And we started that 2012. And in that first year, we did 46,000 pallets. Last month's activity was 75,000 pallets in the month. Highly profitable. And that is going to be the base upon which we build and expand our logistics in Romania. So that's one of our little golden nuggets.
Yeah.
In the UK, we have warehousing at the port. We acquired some businesses which give us facilities in Southampton, Dover, Felixstowe and Heathrow. So we're Brexit ready. So any Brexit questions come up, Brexit for us, we'll make money. So that's the business in a nutshell.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's go into today's RNS directorate change. You've appointed Robert Ross as Chief Financial Officer. Give us some details about Robert, if you could, Stephen.
Yeah, so Robert is coming with a lot of industrial experience in our sector. Europa, a well-known freight forwarder, and we're excited to have him on board. He brings not only expertise as a qualified accountant and knowledge in our sector, but he also brings a little bit of youth, as some of us, or particularly myself, are getting a little bit older. And we've had various meetings with him. I think he will blend into the team fantastically. That's also enabled us to have Richard move from his interim CFO position. And he takes up the position of Chief Commercial Officer. Mm-hmm. And so he'll be working closely with me and taking some of the activities that had been reporting into me. We push to Richard. Richard's been with us for over 15 years. So the city know him. He knows the business. And so he will work very closely with me to push through some of these changes and developments that we have. With a particular emphasis on controlling the IT and M&A and a lot of support functions that we have in the business.
Yeah, yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's discuss how the business is going at the moment. On the weekend, I talked about you on a weekend podcast, and you are valued around 40 million. You were a bit higher until you issued a statement, what was it, back in July, I think, which took the wind from the sails a little bit and knocked the share price. And the issue you announced in there, and even though you highlighted these issues, you still gave forward guidance for this year of 200 million revenue and around about 5 million pre-tax profits. So still profitable, still turning over, you know, a decent amount of revenue there. You know, so growth this year has gone down, but how are the issues getting on? The ones you highlighted in that RNS, how are you dealing with those, Stephen?
We are well underway to sorting out all of those issues. Certainly, the warehouse configuration is taking place. We've got strong interest from new customers coming in. So the UK situation, I think, will be resolved, and that should be all resolved within the next month. Our activity on our e-commerce is picking up. The new contract we have for our regional express side, that kicked off, and that's going quite nicely. So that will flow into next year. So generally, all areas are okay. Our warehousing in Romania will now be up to 92% occupancy. So we're very optimistic about next year and looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've been looking at back at your growth over the last few years, just on the revenue side, and it's been very impressive. You're from 2015 to 2016, 45% growth. 2016 to 2017, 60% growth. 2017 to 18, 54% growth. Now this year, around about 11% growth. Now, where do you envisage going back to? I mean, is this the new norm, 11%, 10%, or do you intend to grow faster than that, you know, next year and beyond?
Yeah, we're going to grow faster. What people have got to look at is, within those figures, we've done 5 acquisitions. We haven't done an acquisition since July 2018. Mm-hmm. Now, we had a period of about 6, 7, 8 months where we were chasing a company in Slovenia into Europa. Yeah. And, okay, we came second on that one. It cost us some money. But you've got to try things. It would have fitted into what we're doing, but okay, there's a lot of other businesses out there that we can do. So we went to market to do a buy and build. Yeah. We have done, so far, 5 acquisitions. But when you look at the growth of the business over the last 3 years, a significant amount of that growth has been through organic growth and organic projects. And so we will maintain good organic growth as well as picking up M&A activity. So we're not going to have anything in this year because Christmas is coming up. We want to have a nice festive season, but you will see a flurry of activity in Q1 and Q2. We will be looking to do maybe 2-3 smaller acquisitions in that first half of the year, and then we're looking at some other exciting opportunities which will then fall into the rest of the year. We have the team in place, and we have one other addition. Who will be starting on the 1st of January, and this person will be coming in as COO, Retail and Fashion. This is a sector I was running and controlling when I started the business in 1988, so it's very dear to me, and in the last few months, I've been getting involved in that area of the business again, And we have some really exciting developments that we will come actually and tell people about, which are going to be very strong growth into our EMT division and textiles. And so very excited about this person being appointed. Can't disclose his background at the moment because he's still employed at another company. But yeah. This will be a significant boost for us, I think, in that area of the business.
Excellent stuff. And whenever I look at a company, Stephen, I always look at what the management, what the board have as far as skin in the game. And you have a big chunk of skin in the game. That says a lot, I think, especially that you recently bought at like 48 pence just before the trading update. So you're obviously, you know, you put your money where your mouth is, haven't you, really?
Yeah, listen, I started the business in 88. And the family, we are not sellers, we're buyers. We bought 500,000. I'm not unhappy with that. And what you may see is the family going into the market buying and certainly not selling in the future. We remain a strong supporter of the business, and we will carry on running this business for the next few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Stephen, one final thing then. As always, three reasons. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're talking about here, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Well, we have a very exciting team which is all assembled. And we have a very focused operating board. We've got some young people in there who are very able to drive this business forward. We are a very diversified business. We are operating in various sectors. Brexit for us will be an opportunity for us to make money in terms of custom clearances. We're well positioned for that. We have some real jewels in the crown. Our pallets business in Romania is a fantastic entity which will help us develop very strongly into logistics in country. So we make money. We also pay dividends. And the growth will continue. In the next 3 years, the target is to get to £500 million turnover. And then within 5 years, £1 billion turnover. And taking advantage of what is a highly fragmented market. The key to this going forward will be the digitalization that is taking place in our industry. That is where we spent a lot of money in the current year trying to make sure we can take advantage of that going forward. And what we have spent is dwarfed by what is being spent by other people investing into the digital forwarders, such as Flexport and Zen in the UK. So that's the page we want to be on. So it's an exciting time.
Excellent stuff. Stephen, good to chat to you. Like I said, lots going on. So no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good to talk to you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yes, good. Thank you.
I was watching a bit of Trump yesterday doing some kind of speech where basically he was bigging up himself and his family. He was just, that's all it was about, pretty much. He was pretty much slagging everyone else off and bigging up himself. He even mentioned Ivanka Trump. Apparently, she's created 14 million jobs, just Ivanka on her own. I don't know if she's done that. It was going to be 500,000, but she created 14 million. He's talking about everything he's done, putting tariffs on everyone. And he talked about China again. And this is a massive play. China, of course, stimulates. Everything rises and falls as far as metals are concerned with the growth of China. And he was saying that the deal is close, the tariff deal is close, but not that close. There's no guarantee. And so it's almost like you step back again now, and you think, what's going on here? Are you saying they cheated on the deal? What's your thoughts here?
Well, the Chinese are tricky to deal with. They have that mentality where they might say something, but they might not actually do what they say. So anything that is agreed in a meeting has to be followed up on and double-checked and checked again. And so when they say they're going to buy more U.S. agricultural products, they don't necessarily do that. And, of course, at the same time, I think we also have to be a bit wary of what Trump is saying through his short tweets to the market. Fortunately, Trump is not in charge of all the negotiations. There's a significant negotiating team behind him, and that's got the full support of not just the Republicans but the Democrats as well. So there's a great deal going on in the background, and I think the U.S. tariff story is not going to necessarily be over that soon. But it's great if we can see a phase one settlement on the tariffs. And I think Trump is shouting and stamping his feet in order to try and achieve that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, there was someone who tweeted out yesterday saying, look at this, you could actually use last year's headlines for this year. And it was like three headlines about the trade deal, and pretty much they're saying exactly the same as they're saying now. It's on, it's off, it's getting close, it's not, you know. And I'm thinking the Chinese must have a bit of pressure on them. It seems like Hong Kong is imploding, you know, it's getting worse. And so they've got that pressure on the one. I don't know how much President Xi feels that pressure, but also you've got the economy, you know, slowing down a bit faster than they'd like because of these tariffs and taking a hit. I just wonder if that will play into it, if that will add pressure, or whether they're thinking, listen, we can hold out for the long term. Trump will be here for another 4 years maximum. I don't know what they think. I mean, it's almost like saying, you know, they release a bit of good news when they want the stocks to go up. Stock markets in America are hitting all-time highs. And then, you know, they'll drift a bit lower, or Trump will talk hard, they'll drift a bit lower, and then he'll say something positive again. It's just like, will it ever get done? I don't know. It's, to a certain extent, will there be a time when the market just prices in the fact that it probably won't get done, you know?
Well, there's significant pressure on the Chinese right now. Hong Kong is a major issue because it's damaging the Hong Kong economy, and that is important to China. I think if it wasn't so critical, the Chinese military would have gone in by now. Mm. I suspect the new tactic will be where the Chinese just arrest anyone they can get their hands on. And there could be a lost generation, lost to Chinese internment camps if they're not careful. I had a report from a friend in Hong Kong this morning saying no trouble outside. I think the Chinese tactic now is to grab the students on their campuses. And it's getting very nasty. A leading Republican said to me a while ago, well, it's not just Hong Kong. There is serious tension in a dozen other major Chinese cities that could spark off as a result of what they see in Hong Kong. So now remember that we probably see a lot more than they do in China, but the rise of social media means that this stuff can get around. So it's a dangerous situation, and at the same time, President Xi is playing hardball with the Americans, and that is causing problems for the broader Chinese economy, which is definitely slowing at the moment. And that's not been great for copper prices and other base metals and industrial metals. Mm. But equally, the price of gold has gone up. It's looking strong there. So there is activity certainly in the mining space. None of us want to see the global economy slowing down, and we want to see global trade as healthy as ever. And I think we will return to that, but we're not returning to it in a great hurry right now.
Do you know what I've heard? I don't know if you've heard this. Have you ever? I don't know if you're on online. It's in the Max Keisler report. I think have you heard of him? But there's a bit of rumours going around that the Chinese are about to reveal, apparently, how much gold they have. I don't know when this is happening, or if you know when it's happening. But there's estimates. They've probably got 10 times as much as the last estimate. Which I think a Chinese just below 2 tons. Or I think 1.8 tons they have. America's the biggest. But I mean, apparently China said they are now the biggest producer of gold in the world, pretty much. And they don't get rid of any. So what they're doing is they're going to have more gold, hopefully, or equal amount of gold in the US, or have more. And also start on a cryptocurrency. So they want to start a currency that's backed by gold to undermine the dollar. And it's a real, you know, it could be real. This could be happening, you know. And I don't know if it's just a conspiracy or not. But there's a lot of people in the gold field. I've watched a couple of videos by people who keep a track on these gold numbers, you know. And they all reckon that the China is stockpiling gold.
Well, backing a cryptocurrency with gold is a bit like creating an ETF. But then the fundamental issue is, would you trust a financial instrument that is effectively under the control of the Chinese Communist Party?
No.
And I'm not sure that when the proverbial hits the fan, that anyone is really going to trust the Chinese Communist Party to be good for the value of that gold. They might just say, "Oh, times are hard. We're going to keep the gold for ourselves." So,
yeah.
I'm not convinced that's going to change the global order of currencies and things, which is part of what they're looking to do. And there have been a number of other massive frauds, multi-billion-dollar frauds in the cryptocurrency world, with OneCoin, for example, that are going to shake confidence in that market. So at the end of the day, I think investors are going to return to physical gold.
Yeah, do you know what though? CryptoCoin, OneCoin, it was never ever a decentralized currency. It was just a Bulgarian fraud. So people got trapped in that. Like, it's like any kind of scam and fraud, isn't it? So it was attached to crypto, but it wasn't ever, a bona fide cryptocurrency. It didn't even exist. It was a pyramid selling scheme. It's a phenomenal. I keep saying this. I've said this a couple of podcasts now. If you've not heard that documentary on BBC, it's a podcast about 8 episodes. It's phenomenal. There's people are still buying it. It didn't even exist. It's like phenomenal about this scam. But now, what would happen though if China came out? For example, I'm looking at the gold reserves now of countries. United States apparently 8,100 tons. Germany second with 3,300 tons. Italy's fourth, a third with 2.4. But China's down at fifth or sixth with 1,900 tons. If they had, they reveal now they had more gold than America. What would happen there? What would be how would the world react to that?
Well, there's been speculation for many years that the Americans may have sold all their gold years ago.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's that bothered as to whether the Chinese have squirreled a lot of gold away. The central bank has been buying gold for some years because it needed to catch up with everyone else. Yeah. What was more interesting was to see governments like Poland and Russia buying a lot more gold in order to support. Well, particularly Russia was buying a lot of gold so that if it ever got excluded from US dollar clearing, that it could still trade in the markets that it was still allowed to trade in.
Yeah.
For the government of Poland to buy a lot of gold means that it was concerned about the Eurozone and the impact of the euro, particularly with Brexit and things like, and potentially a collapse of the Eurozone, maybe on the back of a collapse of Deutsche Bank, or the collapse of Deutsche Bank and a number of Italian banks that have been rather close to the edge in recent years. So there are significant concerns in the global economy. Gold is still a great place to invest. I also think equities are very safe from an investment perspective because it's quite hard for somebody to steal your equity out of your broking account.
Yeah.
And the ultimate account, as we saw when Lehman Brothers went down, was to leave cash in your LME broker account. If you're fortunate enough and rich enough to have an LME broker account, that seems to be the ultimate place to store value. So it's difficult for investors these days to protect their hard-earned cash. Of course, if you buy equities, you take the risk of the share price moving up.
Yeah,
and down.
It depends what you buy exactly. I mean, most stocks on AIM, it's quite highly risky. So, anyway, let's get into that then. So, couple of stocks with news out, John, of late. What are you looking at?
ARC Minerals, it's a company that I personally love because I really like the copper projects in Zambia, where they've been issuing some fabulous drill results. But today they say that they've sold the Casa mining asset. They spent a bit of money on it. It's in the DRC, and the Congo has become a really difficult place to operate mines in. It's just too expensive. There's a lot of trouble out there. It's not just warlords running around, but there's also Ebola in the east of the country, and it's always been a bit of a mess. But it seems to be more of a mess than normal. And ARC Minerals quite rightly want to focus their resources and their funds on the Shazaya project and the Kalaba project in Zambia. So they've got hopefully the ore from Shazaya will truck down to Kalaba and produce some cash flow, maybe $10 to $18 million worth of sales, perhaps in a year's time. So that looks nice, and you know, this is a company that really doesn't like to issue equity in the way that many AIM companies do. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but you know, they have the ability to drive their own earnings and push the stock forwards, and they've got cash coming in from the Casa Mining sale, which is really good news for them.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be good. At the moment, the share price is having a rough time of it, isn't it? It did spike up to like 5 pence, down at 2.8 at the moment, but it seems to be forming a nice base there. At around that level, it seems to be maybe some support there. You reckon?
Yeah, I think there's a good opportunity for this stock to suddenly jump higher, and for the value that is in the new discovery to start to be recognised in the market.
Yeah. All right, marvellous. Cool, John. Anything else? What's happening?
Yeah, another favourite of ours, Bushveld Minerals, much bigger stock. It's got quite strong cash flow generation. It has agreed to lead a consortium to acquire a business called Aeronox. Now, Aeronox is owned by a Canadian company called Cellcube, and Cellcube have had a few problems, to say the least. They failed to raise money in Canada. And let's face it, the Canadian market is pretty dry at the moment in terms of liquidity. And they are so the interesting thing about Enerox is that they are leaders in manufacturing and rolling out vanadium redox flow batteries. Mm-hmm. So it's a very exciting acquisition to make. We expect Bushveld Energy to end up with about 25 to 49% of Enerox, and this will give them fantastic access into the market for delivering on a pipeline of redox batteries, and for selling vanadium electrolyte into those batteries. So great news for Bushveld Minerals. Its subsidiary Bushveld Energy, which it owns most of, they own 84% of Bushveld Energy, and I think this helps to lead the business forward. So I'm pretty excited about that, because I think at the end of the day, if vanadium redox batteries take off in the world, and no reason they shouldn't do, because they are cost effective compared to lithium, for example, and they're much better at grid storage and long power release, so they should fit very well with solar installations and with wind power. So we are looking forward to Bushveld Energy actually leading the way going forwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another one. It's share prices gone up to 48, come back down to 20, but it has tested that level a couple of times, 20 pence, and has come back to it. So good support level if it breaks out and may go lower, but it looks like it, you know, may form a bottom here, hopefully. But there you go, marvellous stuff. John, thank you for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Velocis, VLS ticker, at 0.8% to 1.23 pence. At two, Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. I spoke to Gil, of course, on the podcast. They are at the moment down 50% to 62.5 pence on that heavy oil. Gil, of course, reckons it's fine. Initial analysis suggests it's commercial, but people tend to worry with this. At three, Tullow Oil, of course, a partner there in that drill with Ecolandic, they're down 27% to £1.50. At two, Stevens on the podcast, of course, Expediator, 32 pence at the moment, up 4.9%. Good stuff from Stephen, and, like I said, I think this was oversold in that trading update, and we'll see. You know, the growth has been very good this year. It's the worst said growth, still 11% growth. That's, you know, previous year's been 40, 50, but they reckon they're going towards even more growth, of course, back to norm next year. Number one, Tissue Regenics is number one, up 45% to 1.125 pence. Big riser yesterday as well. It's doing very well. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are from the following companies. At five, Jangada Mines. Study identifies export routes and Vanadium Project. At 4, Horizonte Minerals, quarterly report. At 3, Integumin, heads of terms, framework, agreement, and a trading update. Number 2, it's Encontesi Energy, holdings in company. Number 1, most liked RNS, of course, John Mayer talked about it. Arc Minerals, the sale of Casa Mining. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.